voice message today, but I didn't talk to him.
Okay. Well, today is going to be another fun one.
This is basically looking at actual examples to help you wrap your head around the stuff we did last time. And so the first part of the lecture is going to be going through the expanding universe, kind of a cosmology example of the stuff we talked about, the Christoffel symbols and everything. And then we're going to move on and talk about the Riemann curvature tensor and do an example of that. So hopefully after today you have an idea a little bit better on what we're doing. And so, you know, the interesting thing here is that, like, officially we don't get to cosmology towards the end, but we're already covering a lot of cosmology-type stuff through it, so it'll look like old hat by the time we get to it. So, we start off, this is the expanding universe space-time metric, where basically you've got this A, which is a scale factor, and it just explains how space expands, and then time is just moving along. And so you can rewrite this using a delta function. And so this is in Cartesian coordinates. And you can also write it as basically the metric and this other stuff, where the metric is given by, you know, 1 for time and then the scale factor squared and the delta function. So if you want to you know, just basically integrate over the to find the action on this thing, to find the space-time interval, or the distance between two points in space-time, it'll come from this integral I.
You know what? Tonight, for some reason, there's a lot of noise.
Okay. This comes from this integral I, and you can see that I here is equal to 1/2 the metric, and then you've got the four velocity terms integrated over time. And so this is the same thing as before when you integrate ds to find a length or to find proper time. And so you can see this reduces to 1/2 the integral ds squared d tau dt. Same thing, just comparing the two equations. And when you plug in the actual cosmology metric into this, this is 1/2. You got the parentheses, the minus dt d tau squared, and then the a squared delta function, and then the four velocity terms, all integrated over tau.
And what did you plug in to substitute
for the... Oh, all I did was just substitute ds from here at the very top into here.
Oh.
So this applied to
that
metric.
And then you did all the differentiation?
Yeah. So this is just to find an interval between points in space-time in a curved space. Okay? So that's all that is. And so the idea is, if we're going to use calculus of variations, where we do a slight variation in the coordinate, and we try to find the minimal value for this integral, so the delta I is equal to 0, then we're going to get n equations, one for each dimension. And each one is going to tell you kind of this, when you do slight variations in time or space, what is going to be the minimal path between them. And then what should happen is that by comparing what comes out of this to the geodesic equation, we should be able to get the Christoffel symbol. So this is a little bit backwards from what we talked about before. Before we talked about, you know, you've got the metric and you can use the metric to calculate the Christoffel symbol. Here we're actually going to calculate the Christoffel symbol from knowing what this integral is. So, first thing we do is we do a variation in time. And so we do just a t plus delta t. In that case, A of t plus delta t is just equal to a of t plus the time derivative of a times delta t. And you could see that this time derivative term is like partial a partial t, right, times a delta in t, which is the same thing as like saying you have a delta in a.
That's just for the last term.
Yeah, that's just for the last term. So basically, by doing this variation in time, this it should come out something like that. And so when you do the calculus of variations, you see your variation, your integral, is going to be 1/2 times, in parentheses, you're varying the delta t, so that affected the t up here, the dt d tau up here. And then you've got your other variation in a, since it's a function of t, and when you vary that, you got an a dot here, and you just expand everything else out, and you have your delta t term here and a delta t term here. So now you use integration by parts, and when you do your integration by parts, these, instead of having two first derivatives, it becomes a second derivative. And then this term here is pretty much preserved, and you just pull the delta t out the back. Can everybody kind of see how that happens from integration by parts? Yeah, you can kind of work through it on your own to just.
Where did the delta I equation, where does that come from?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, just because if you put a delta in the I here, then what happens is you've got t plus delta t, right? And so here, this dt here becomes dt, and then it becomes a times a delta d d delta t. So just from varying your dt.
Taking the derivative, dt d tau squared, that's what it looks
like. Well, actually, what's happening here is really that you have, you're basically, you're taking your I and you're turning it into I plus delta I, right? And so in doing that, your T goes to T plus delta T. And so if you have something that's like a partial T, it's going to become partial T plus a delta T partial tau. Or partial delta t partial tau. And so what happens here is that before...
Oh, could you go back to that one more time?
Yeah.
Well,
see what happened... So that's basically what this became, okay? But you see here, you had this squared, right?
Okay.
And so since it's squared, it's like you're squaring this whole thing. But then you have to subtract off the dt because you just want the delta terms. So if you take this whole thing, which it should be something like the partial t partial tau squared plus 2 times the... Well, actually, sorry. 2 times partial t partial tau...
Wait, you're going off the edge of the universe.
Oh. partial delta t d tau.
Okay.
And then you don't really care about the higher order d tau squared term because it's so small. And then you subtract out this term.
Okay.
Then you're left with something like this.
Okay.
Which is what we have right here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's where that actually comes from. Yeah, I mean, there's some more stuff if you want to go and kind of check through this stuff. You can also look in Arfkin and Weber, and there's a lot of stuff on calculus of variations kind of later on in the book. And that stuff, it's the same kind of math we're dealing with here, so you can...
It also looks like, in this case, it's the equivalent of taking the derivative of the terms in the integral.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a coincidence because they're both squared.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it is very similar to that. But yeah, that's another way to look at it too. But I mean, I like that other way of looking at it too. But it's a lot like taking the derivative of the terms in the integral.
And can we, while we're having this little intermission, can we go back to the big picture, which you said in words, which I think was to find the shortest distance between two points?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically this is just looking at a path. It's basically a path integral. Because essentially, when you integrate this thing, it's just going to come out to be equal to s, right? Because you've got ds squared, and when you integrate this,
your twos cancel. Mm-hmm.
And you're just integrating d tau, and so over d tau, and not d tau, and it disappears, and you just basically have a S term there.
So you're saying I equals S?
Effectively, yeah. Or it's like path between the two points.
Between the two points.
Mm-hmm. Or I guess, or S to some power. So that's effectively what this is like, and that's why we use this, comparing it to this geodesic equation, because the geodesic equation also looks at path length between two points. Okay. So you did your integration by parts, and you got this equation. And for this to be minimized, everything in the square brackets has to go to zero. And if you do a direct comparison between this equation and this equation, it's pretty clear that the Christoffel symbol up here is equal to this. And you could see here that the reason why this is a zero in the contravariant term is because we're dealing with time here, which is the zeroth term here. And then these two here are spatial terms, I and J, so because it's delta function IJ. And so these are spatial terms, so they're not time-like terms. And that's how we got the AA dot and the delta. And then you could see that all the other terms with zero in the contravariant term are going to go to zero. Because I has to equal J, and so you can't have zero for any of these other terms. And so effectively, this is just writing this equation, where I just literally just threw in the zero.
And the superscript was time?
Yeah. Yes, time is zero. Zeroth dimension. And so to be very general, we left these other two as rho and sigma, even though if rho or sigma were zero, this would just disappear. But that would be the same thing as saying that if rho and sigma are zero, the Christoffel symbol disappears, and you just have the second derivative of time respect to tau is equal to zero.
Why is the Christoffel symbol 000? Why is that equal to zero?
Oh, because this is IJ, because these are both spatial. If either one of these could be zero, then that would be time. And that doesn't fit in the equation, because these are space, not time.
Well, if they were time, then they would both be buying them. Can't do it.
Nope, because look. If you go up here, this is definitely space. Mm-hmm. You can't replace that with time. So the zero of coefficient here disappears, and it doesn't work. So you can't just make it. The time just doesn't work there. Okay. All right. So that's when we vary time. Now, what happens when we vary space? Well, you've got here your x sub I is replaced with your x sub I plus a delta x sub I. And you go through the same thing. But here, you notice for the first term, which would be right here, there is nothing varying in time here. I mean, in space. This is just time.
So there's no delta in this term, and there's no time and no space dependence in the A, so all the variation has to happen over in these last two terms. And so that's what happens here. So we don't have anything in the delta from the time part or the A. All the variation happens up here. Same math we did before. And so we do an integration by parts to get rid of this delta in the derivative. And we end up breaking it again into this thing, which is a second derivative with respect to tau. And then we have these, which are just a derivative of A with respect to tau and a derivative of the coordinate with respect to tau. This is, comes from doing the integration by parts.
And A is like a scalar?
A is a scalar because it's the scale factor.
The function of time.
It's a function of time.
But not of space.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're integrating
through time. Oh, scale factor, like if you think you're dying, time slows down?
No. It's... Yeah, this is actually saying, it's just a parameter saying how big is the universe.
Okay.
So if A is equal to 1, then this looks like a flat universe. If it's bigger, then you got a bigger universe than we got now. If it's smaller, then it looks smaller than this. So here's a neat thing. Partial dA d tau is equal to the time derivative of A times dt d tau, because this is just dA dt, and then this is dt d tau. And so you can replace this with an A dot term and a time derivative term. And so you divide through by the A squared, and you get this equation, which again looks a lot like your geodesic equation. So if you compare the two, you get that the Christoffel symbol now should look like this. But you notice here your Christoffel symbol is I instead of zero, Latin indice, which means it has to go with the spatial term here. And so that is going to be equal to all of this stuff here. And so you could see here that since this is time and this is space, one of these terms, rho, has to be zero. And the other one has to be a Latin indice to represent the spatial term. And so we could say that if you take zero, zero, it's like two times terms or two spatial terms, the Christoffel symbol disappears. So you have to have one of each. So I use a J. And you get the delta A dot over A times a delta function, IJ, because this I and this I are the same. That's why we got the delta function. So we basically found all the Christoffel symbols for this expanding space-time by just using our sort of least action and just comparing it to the geodesic equation. All right, now... for null geodesics, and this is basically means light, ds squared is equal to zero, and so your metric is going to reduce to something like this. And this is just a simple 1 plus 1 dimensional model, where we just take when you say 1 plus 1 dimensional, what they mean is 1 dimension of time, 1 dimension of space, instead of normally we live in a 3 plus 1 dimensional space. And so if you do a one-dimensional model, then this becomes very simple, and you can kind of divide through and see that, divide through by this affine parameter. And you can see that space and time are going to relate to each other by the inverse of the scale factor. And so if you know that the geodesic equation should look like this from before, then that tells you that this was our equation that we had. And then you can take this equation and you can replace these terms dealing with the spatial part with this, or vice versa. So we're basically, what we're going to do is we're going to take this equation here, which we know is true for the null geodesic, and we have our full geodesic equation for the time, and then we just replace these dxi d lambda terms with this 1 over a dt d lambda, and you end up getting this differential equation here. And then you can solve that differential equation for dt d lambda, because a dot is a function of time, a is a function of time, and so you can essentially just, you know, solve it just like you'd solve any other differential equation, and what you'll get is that dt d lambda is equal to omega naught over a. So this is the solution to a differential equation. That's how you get from there to here. Omega naught is a constant. And so if you look at it, if you take a time derivative of this, then you end up getting, you know, time derivative of a, and then another factor of a squared with a minus sign, and then you multiply omega naught over here, and the whole thing works out. So, given that you know a as a function of time, and you know dt d lambda is equal to omega naught over a. So if you know what a is as a function of time, you can find t as a function of lambda. And the two relate to each other. And so if we look at a few things having to do with the physics here, energy, for example, is equal to the contraction of four momentum with four velocity. And so that you can expand out to be the basically this term right here, dx naught d lambda, this is like your momentum for a massless particle, a light, beam of light. And four velocity is just going to be this u0. And the metric term here is just here to give you a dot product between the two, or scalar product. So when you combine each element, this is equal to minus 1. This is equal to 1. And, you know, from this 4 velocity. And this term is equal to omega naught over A. So the answer is the energy is equal to omega naught over A. If you take A equal to 1 and H bar equal to 1, then you could just say that E is equal to H bar omega naught, which is exactly like energy you would observe from in quantum mechanics, where energy is directly proportional to frequency. You also get this thing called a cosmological redshift, where if you take the energy that you observe and you divide it by the energy when it was omitted, you get the ratio of the scale factors of, you know, each time. And that's why it is that, you know, when you look at an object far away, cosmologically or astronomically, it's redshifted from where it is today because of the expansion of the universe. So since the wavelength is inversely proportional to the frequency at a function of t increases with time, the wavelength also grows with time. So the wavelength grows with time, and so you can calculate this redshift. This is a z.
Oh, that is a z.
Yeah.
Awfully lot like a 2, isn't it?
Yeah, and I figured you were going to ask that.
Thank you. No, I was going to take it as a 2.
Okay. So, this wavelength is equal to the difference in the frequencies between the emitted and observed, divided by the observed frequency, and that's going to come out as a ratio of the scale factors minus 1.
And omega 1 is the emitted, and 2 is the observed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, omega 1 is omitted, or anything with a 1 is omitted and 2 is observed.
Okay.